Hello, I'm Russell Rowland, author of 56 Counties, A Montana Journey. A few years ago, I visited every county in our state and interviewed people from all walks of life. I then read dozens of books about the history of Montana and the West. I wanted to explore what it means to be from Montana, how it impacts the people here. This program is a continuation of that conversation. I'm talking to people about how Montana has shaped them and what they are doing to shape Montana. Welcome to 56 Counties. Like so many Montana towns, Livingston, the county seat of Park County, started because of the railroad. Mining was also an important industry in Park County for years, but just about the time the railroad left town in 1984, Livingston was starting to develop a reputation as a mecca for artists, writers, and Hollywood celebrities. The influx of culture has created a town that probably has the highest number of creative people per capita in the state. Its close proximity to Yellowstone Park and to Chico Hot Springs also makes it a popular stopping point for tourists. Livingston has maintained its small town charm while also struggling with many of the same issues that other Montana towns do. My guests for this episode of 56 Counties represent both sides of a town that still harbors many longtime residents, but also has a growing number of transplants, all sharing an unbridled love for one of the most beautiful towns in Montana. Scott McMillian grew up in Livingston and is now owner-editor of the Montana Quarterly, one of the most respected magazines in the Northwest. And Joanne Gardner Lowell moved to Livingston from California and immediately used her experience and connections in the music business to bring new life to the music scene in Park County. Joanne Gardner Lowell.
I remember reading about Livingston when I was a kid. Elizabeth Ashley had a book, and she was dating Tom McGuane, and she was here, and I thought, well, that place sounds interesting. Mm. And then I remember seeing a piece on Harrison Ford, because he was married to the woman who wrote E.T., and they lived in Paradise Valley. And some guy met him here, and they wandered the streets, and nobody bothered him. And I thought, wouldn't that be amazing to go to someplace where nobody bothers you?
When was the first time you were here?
I was here in probably 2005.
Oh, so
because I was
right
living. Yeah, I just moved, and you know, when you move to Montana, everybody comes and stays with you for like 2 weeks. They don't do that anywhere else. Yeah. And so I was finding myself driving everybody through the park, and as I said, coming through Paradise Valley and ending up here. So I just started. I didn't know anybody when I moved here. Mm-hmm. I just sort of took a wild shot that it would be a cool place to live, because every time I came here, I would see fascinating people at this bar and grill.
Scott McMillian. So what was it like as a kid growing up here? It must have been a fun place to grow up, close to the river. And
well, we had a lot of giggles, but I mean, I thought it was a low-rent version of Mayberry when I was a kid. I couldn't wait to get out of here.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I hunted and fished and hiked. And in those days, you could take off from town and go in any direction as far as you wanted. Mm-hmm. Just put on a pack and go off for a couple of days. Nowadays, there's too many fences and no trespassing signs for kids to do that. Mm. So we had a lot of adventures, swimming in the river, even though I was forbidden. I did it anyway.
Yeah, sure.
And, it was fun. But I was anxious to get out. You know, I was anxious to go to college at the University of Montana.
So you went to Missoula for journalism? Or?
For English.
Okay.
And then I traveled. I lived in the Far East for a while.
Did you?
Yeah, I went to Antarctica, South America. Europe. I pretty much lived out of a backpack for several years, and
nice.
I came back here when I was about 30.
Okay. Well, if you're like me, that made you appreciate Montana a lot.
Oh, absolutely.
More when you left.
Yeah.
Now, when did you buy the magazine?
I bought the magazine in 2012.
Oh, okay. So 7 years.
Yeah.
And what were you doing before that?
Well, I worked at the Bozeman Chronicle for 20 years. I was the environmental reporter. And then, everybody knows what's going on with newspapers. They're shrinking. And so I was offered a buyout in 2008. Mm. So I took it and then was freelancing. And I'd written for the Montana Quarterly in every issue since inception in 2005. was going to an editorial meeting, and the editor called up and said, well, don't bother, they're shutting it down.
Oh.
And
who was the editor then?
It was Pioneer Newspaper Group, which no longer exists, and it was a company that owned the Bozeman Chronicle.
Oh, okay.
And several other papers around the Northwest. And so I thought, well, I think I can run it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they worked with me. They gave me a fair deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know how much I didn't know.
Mm, I'm sure.
The editorial part, I was real confident on that. I'd never opened a spreadsheet before.
Oh.
But yeah. I'm pretty good at them now.
So tell me where you grew up.
Well, I was born in California. Okay. My dad was in the film business. He was a cameraman.
Was he?
Okay. On Route 66.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, I don't know what your dad does, but you kind of grow up kind of knowing a little bit about what your dad does. You understand it. So we would be on crew on TV things and commercials and mm-hmm. movies. And, you know, we had a bunch of kids and we were cheaper than sandbags. So he could put us on a light stand and we would just hold it and you could watch.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time I was a teenager, I was crewing on films.
Mm.
So I knew it wasn't mysterious to me. It just seemed like what you do.
Right.
And we lived in Kansas. My mother was from Kansas.
Mm.
And we moved back to Kansas. There were a lot of kids to help take care of. So we moved to Kansas and settled in Lawrence. I ended up going to Nashville because I figured at least if I went to one of those centers where you have film and music, you could kind of decide later.
Mm.
And it didn't feel like a move from Kansas to New York
right.
in any sense as a 20-year-old.
Yeah.
But I moved to Nashville just because I had some friends that live near there.
Mm.
And I thought, well, okay. And I started running audio for this band called the Newgrass Revival.
Mm.
And they were a really extraordinary band. And I would travel around with them and run their sound, which
okay.
was kind of fun, you know, and a new skill. And then I got to Nashville and moved and started immediately doing TV commercials.
Mm.
But then I met some people doing music and I started singing with them. So, you know, I kind of had a foot in both worlds for a long time.
Uh-huh.
And then all of a sudden music videos got invented and I thought, oh hello, this is what I need to do.
Were you born here? I know you grew up in this
area. I was born in Chicago.
Okay.
But my parents were in transit.
Okay.
They're on their way back to Montana.
Mm.
And my mother was born here. My grandmother was born
really?
Here.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a long history here.
Yeah, my ancestors came here in the 1880s to
wow.
the Shields Valley.
And they were homesteaders or what were their...
Well, they were ranchers.
Okay.
One set was a dairy farmer in Clyde Park, and the other set of great-grandparents were... ranchers east of Clyde Park. It was very different. There were somewhere north of 1,000 railroad jobs here mm. then. It was more prosperous in a lot of ways because those were good union jobs. They
yeah.
paid well. Downtown was a lot busier then. It was different. There were four department stores, hardware stores, drug stores, vibrant nightlife. There were, I think, 27 bars, music five
wow.
nights a week. Also a vibrant morning life for guys getting off the midnight shift. There were bars that opened at 7 o'clock for them, 7 in the morning.
Wow.
And since the railroad left in 1984, and with the completion of the interstate, that's been hard on retail businesses in Livingston.
Mm. That's what you did for...
That's what I did. When videos got started in Nashville, I was kind of the go-to local girl.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. That knew how to do them. And then eventually Roseanne Cash and I started our own company
mm.
called Acme Pictures. And
okay.
We were trying to do the little bit left of center people.
Mm.
Like we had a rule that if you wore a cowboy hat, we would not do your video. Because there were a lot of cowboy hats coming through.
Uh-huh.
But then we changed our mind and we did a video with Hank Williams Jr. and his father.
Oh.
Where we digitally put
Wait
them
a minute.
Together called Tear in My Beer.
Okay.
Yeah, I produced that.
Wow.
So that was really cool because that won every award and got nominated for a Grammy.
There was hardly any video of Hank, though, right? How did you find
that? We found a kinescope of a Kate Smith television program.
Oh.
When you look at it now, it's completely ham-fisted. I mean, it looks like, oh my God.
Right,
you
the know. Technology's changed so much.
Exactly, it looks like old computer animation now.
That's
but
funny.
At the time, you know, nobody had done that except Forrest Gump.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that's why we, you know, we did really well. I had a phone call from Sony, from Columbia Records. They were looking for a head of music video production for the label.
Oh.
And that meant a move to New York to oversee, you know, the largest record company in the world.
Wow.
And at the height of video time.
And that was your job? You were the head of the videos? Wow, yes, okay. Yeah.
I was hired as the vice president of video production at Columbia.
Okay.
And then I was made into senior vice president of video production at Sony. So I oversaw both Epic and Columbia and Sony Latin.
Mm.
And then started traveling all over the world doing 100 videos a year.
So, you hear the stories about just about every entertainment industry being dominated by men. Was it?
Oh, God.
Did you encounter that?
Oh, goodness,
just
yes.
a little?
Yeah. There were 3 senior vice presidents at Sony Music that were women.
Okay.
Out of a lot.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, there was a woman in international and a woman in marketing and me. And
so how did you deal with that? Just
Well, you would deal with it in different ways. You know, if you're really excellent at your job and you're pretty confident in that and you don't take a lot of crap, then they tend to say, okay, that's fine.
Right.
But, you know, I saw another woman be berated and leave in tears, and, you know, that was the end of her career.
So you've been here for the transition from the working class railroad town to what it is now, and how did that come about? I mean, I know a lot of it had to do with some of the big name writers and movie stars moving into the area. And
well, I think Tom McWane was a big part of that. He came here and invited his friends. He liked to fish, and he's a very magnetic personality.
Mm-hmm.
And people came to see Tom and go fishing. And this was in the 70s and 80s. You know, the railroad was winding down in that period. Rent was cheap, fishing was good. And for people who could ply their craft anywhere, that was a pretty attractive scenario. So a lot of people started moving here, and then one thing led to another. And then in 92, when Robert Redford filmed A River Runs Through It here, that generated a lot of publicity.
Mm-hmm.
Even before the movie came out, there were a lot of major magazine profiles.
Oh, really?
Redford was talking about using the movie as a vehicle to highlight the value of clean waters that support fish. And that publicity drew people, and a lot of those people started buying houses.
Mm.
And the population started growing.
How long have you been in Livingston?
I moved in 2005.
Okay.
Yeah.
From LA, or where were you living?
Well, I was living for a few months for a summer. I was living in a teepee out at Norris Hot Springs after 10 years at Sony Music, looking for a huge change.
Mm-hmm.
And Norris Hot Springs was pretty much that. You know, I left being senior vice president of video production and became the grill cook at Norris.
Really?
Yeah, which was great because, you know, instead of saying, well, Beyonce, how late will you be?
Yeah.
I would say, would you like ketchup on your hamburger? You know, it was like a whole lot less stress.
You're listening to 56 Counties on Yellowstone Public Radio. I'm your host, Russell Rowland, and this month I'm talking to Scott McMillian, editor of the Montana Quarterly, and Joanne Gardner-Lowell, former vice president of video production for Sony Records.
I was thinking about probably as far as the cultural influence of this area, I would guess that Livingston probably has more artists per capita than any town in Montana, wouldn't you say? Like artist, writer, musician.
It's the newsman in me. I want numbers. I want to measure.
Right.
But, yeah. But I think, yeah, it's a real high proportion.
Yeah.
It's an artistic community. We've got events all the time.
And they draw. I mean, I've
always
been amazed whenever I come to something here that it's, you know, it doesn't matter how well-known the person is. There's people there.
Mm-hmm. I thank Mark Bodine and and Lisa Snow Bodine for who own Elk River Books. They're major players in that. And Andrew Peacock.
Yes.
They keep the ball rolling that way. A few people can make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what do you think as far as environmental awareness? This seems like a pretty vibrant area in that regard, too.
Yeah, we've got a very, very effective local environmental group, the Park County Environmental Council.
Mm-hmm.
They do good work. We had a major groundwater pollution problem here, left by the railroad, by decades of sloppy practices by Burlington Northern and its corporate ancestors. But the worst of that has been cleaned up.
Mm.
It's much better than it was, but there's still pollution in the groundwater.
Is that right?
Yeah. But it's much, much better than it was.
Mm-hmm.
Much better than it was. And that was a long and divisive and expensive process to get that work done, but I think it was worth it. We've got housing problems. You know, real estate here is big city expensive, but wages aren't big city high.
Right, right. So like the working class.
Yeah, there's a lot of people working two or three jobs to make a go of it. We don't have a real visible homeless problem, but if you go to the campgrounds, you see where people are living in tents or vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
That's not unique to here, but it's a growing phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those people are working. They're getting up and going to work every
right,
day.
Right.
Not just lounging around
in the
campground.
Yeah, they just can't afford to have rent a house.
Yeah, they can't afford a house.
That's amazing.
I think there was culture here because of the wealth that was overseeing the railroad.
Mm.
And I think when the railroad moved out, that was right about the time the Renegades moved in with Peter Fonda and Tom McGuane and Margie Kidder. And,
yeah.
You know, all those guys.
And that started a trend, basically.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Then Dennis Quaid was here, and Meg Ryan lived here, and Harrison
mm-hmm.
Ford was here. Now
mm-hmm.
John Mayer's here. Bill Payne from Little Feats lived here since 1980.
Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton's here, you know. Tom Brokaw.
Oh, does he live here?
Uh-huh.
I didn't
know. Yep, he lives
that.
Up on the Boulder.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Has for years.
So how would you describe Livingston then? As, you know, it's kind of touristy, but it's not like Virginia City touristy. It's more like,
well,
it still has a lot of the flavor of a small Montana town.
It is. I'm so glad they don't have shootouts at
noon. Yeah.
You know, it doesn't feel like they're... It feels like this town shows up authentically.
Mm-hmm. That's
and,
exactly how I would.
You know, people walk down and it hasn't really changed. Nobody's putting up a show. Nobody dresses like a cowboy.
Right.
You know, there's no stagecoach rides.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine with all of us because we live here.
Yeah.
And this town doesn't feel like it changes at all during tourist season. It just is. This
mm-hmm.
is Livingston. And if you like Livingston, you might enjoy, you know, coming during tourist season.
Yeah.
Come for a hoot. It's very fun and it's free. But I think it shows up that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I've run into so many writers. I tell people when they say, where do you live? I'm like, well, I live in this little town of about 8,000 with almost 200 published authors.
Mm, yeah.
And 15 art galleries. And they're like, really?
Right.
Because that's a lot of culture and art for a town this size.
No kidding. Yeah.
The town functions. I mean, one morning I had 6 errands. I went to my accountant, the post office, somewhere else, and even went down and renewed my license plates and got a cup of coffee, and the whole thing took 45 minutes.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, in a lot of places you got to take a half a day off
exactly.
to go to the post office and the copy shop.
Yeah. What are some of the, what would you say are some of the main issues that are facing Livingston now or in Park County? I know there's a high suicide rate for young folks here.
Yeah, we've had some tragic suicides of teenagers the last few years. I don't know that there is a single cause for that. Suicide is high everywhere, and especially high in Montana.
Yeah.
There are lots of businesses that want to expand, but they just can't find the help that they need. Mm. And the help can't find a place to live.
Right.
So it's a tightening gyre. And some of the folks around town disagree with me, but I think we could absorb another 4,000 or 5,000 people into this, to the 8,000 that we have now, and still be us.
Mm-hmm.
Not be something else.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of young people around. The numbers, the attendance numbers in the school are good.
Are they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I see people pushing strollers and riding bikes with their kids.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know most of them.
Yeah.
But I'm glad to see them.
I was surprised how many young people I saw out when I was out for breakfast this morning.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of young couples.
Yeah. And about 3:30, this place gets loud because there's an after-school program right next door.
Oh, really?
So as soon as school gets out, it gets we get a real big happy noise when all these kids come trooping down here.
Yeah.
But the town functions. It's very easy. It's an easy town to walk in.
Mm-hmm.
When the wind isn't blowing too bad.
Yeah. How about the wind?
I don't mind it.
You really? You get used to it?
Yeah. Well, there's some days, you know, where it just yeah, you get 4 days of 60 miles an hour and big gusts on top of that. It gets rough. On days like that, I'm glad I have an inside job.
Yeah.
But I don't mind it. It feels almost cleansing. It can get on your nerves.
Mm-hmm.
But it got on my nerves Sunday when I rode my raft into it for 6 hours.
Oh, wow. What was it like when you first moved here? How did you adjust to the slower,
quieter? I welcomed
it.
I grew up in Kansas, you know, and so what I would see was this, people would stop and talk to you.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very welcoming place. And having lived in New York and
LA,
you know, there's certainly the commute home is pretty simple and is marked in minutes. You know, a few minutes if there's a train,
mm-hmm.
but mostly just minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I loved all that. I loved the fact that you could join in conversations, especially in the wintertime, that all of the authors would, when Harrison was here, you know, when Gatz was alive, you would have these dinners out at Pine Creek where they would just read you something they were working on. But everybody would just sit and listen, and you would read, you know, Jamie Harrison Pottenberg would read for a while, and Gatz would read, and Richard would read.
Yeah.
And on Tuesday nights, in the dead of winter, we all went out to Pine Creek Lodge and had whatever was for dinner out there and listened to what those guys were working on and gals.
Right.
And I loved that. It was like the incubator for what was next. So the dead of winter is windy and cold, and the dead of winter is when everybody hunkers down and works. Richard brought me to a Christmas party. I moved on December 16th, and on December 18th, there was a Christmas party. There were just all these people at this party, and pretty soon this squad started.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to do music events. It's kind of what I wanted to get back to doing was music stuff. So when I turned 50 the next summer, I threw myself a birthday party, and I called it A Song Runs Through It, and I invited Rodney Crowell and Daryl Scott and Michael Johnson and Roseanne Cash and Jim Photoglow and J.D. Souther to come to my prom. I decided I was going to have a prom when I turned 50 because I had not been named prom queen through some oversight in high school. And so I figured I'd have a prom, and all these people signed up to come to the prom.
Wow.
And I looked at it and thought, we should probably do a show.
Yeah.
And so we did the show at the little band shell. And that was really the first thing I did in Livingston. And I'm sure people came going, who is this person?
Mm-hmm.
You know? But I remember meeting Scott McMillian there, and all, and even now when I look at photographs, it's everybody I know was in the crowd.
Is that right?
I just didn't really know all
didn't
of them.
Didn't know them yet. Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And they showed up for this really wonderful day, and then we had a prom. We literally rented the Elks and had a full-on prom, and Richard Wheeler was the prom king.
Oh, was he?
And I was the prom queen.
Yeah.
And it was a really fun time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I miss Richard.
I do too. So the next one I did was a thing called the Paradise Valley Music Festival. And this local guy wanted me to help with that. And so I was happy to do that. And then that led to Red Ants Pants.
Oh.
Yeah, because Ben Bullington, my friend, lived in White Sulphur and was friends with Sarah.
Oh, okay.
And she had been thinking about a festival. She came to the Paradise Valley Music Festival and she said,
"Oh."
She said, "I make pants. I don't know how to do festivals. Help me with the festival."
Oh, so you helped her with that?
I produced the first video.
Oh, did you
the
really?
First one. Yeah, okay. And did all the marketing. I just remember all of us standing there waiting for the gates to open. Is anybody going to come?
Right.
And we looked out and the line of motorhomes was as far as your eye could see.
Is that right?
So at that point, I'm doing all these different festivals in different places, and Ben got sick. And while I was, John, my now husband, but boyfriend at the time, and I, we were talking, wouldn't it be fun if we did a festival right here? Like, Livingston needs something. Because Red Ants Pants was great for White Sulphur. It's still great for White
Sulphur.
Sure,
yeah.
But we thought we should do something for Livingston. And so we kind of came up for, with this idea. There was a group that was meeting. They were going to have a festival that was kind of Hoot-like.
Mm-hmm.
All the nonprofits were going to get involved, and I was going to do the music. And then Ben got sick and I missed several meetings. And when I came back, a whole new group of people had taken over the thing.
Mm.
And they decided that what we really need to do is do a board and do structure and do bylaws. And I was like, no, man, you're going to miss this year. We got to do it this year. And I will never forget this one guy said to me, "There is no way you can close Main Street and put some Grammy-winning star on a huge stage in this town in September." And I went, okay. And went home and said, "Hey, John, we've got to figure this out and do this thing." And we did. That was probably January or February. And the first hoot was August.
You guys won the best magazine for what? The Northwest?
Yeah, we won that a couple times. Best magazine in the Pacific Northwest. That contest has been discontinued.
Oh, has it?
Unfortunately.
Oh, that's too bad.
So we don't get to win that one anymore. We're competing against Alaska Magazine and magazines coming out of Seattle and Portland. So we showed we could play with the big boys.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the fact that you don't back away from some hard issues.
No, well, our editorial philosophy is Montana warts and all. We all love it here. Almost everybody who writes for the magazine, it lives here.
Right.
And, you know, we realize that it's a pretty cool place, and I think we share a vision of let's not screw it up.
Right.
And that's our group of readers, I think, shares that vision that, you know, this is a place worth protecting.
You've been listening to 56 Counties. 56 Counties is produced by Russell Rowland for Yellowstone Public Radio. The music is written and performed by Aaron Parrott. Additional funding is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. More information and archived episodes available at ypradio.org. My guests this month were Scott McMillian, owner-editor of the Montana Quarterly, and Joanne Gardner-Lowell, former vice president of video production at Sony Records. To subscribe to Montana Quarterly or to read more about the magazine, visit themontanaquarterly.com. And to learn more about the Hoot, visit livingstonhoot.com. See you next time.